Toxic has become a sleeper hit in the dark romance genre, captivating readers with its raw exploration of abuse, survival, and dangerous attraction. Nicole Blanchard's unflinching portrayal of a nurse trapped between an abusive husband and a dangerous prison inmate has resonated with readers seeking complex, morally ambiguous characters. The book has developed a cult following on BookTok, with influencers praising its intense psychological dynamics and steamy scenes that push boundaries. What makes this story particularly compelling is how it forces readers to confront uncomfortable questions. Can someone who's done terrible things still be worthy of love? And can a relationship born from trauma ever truly heal? Tessa Emerson lives a life of quiet desperation. Each morning begins with mechanical intimacy as her husband Vic uses her body with practiced indifference. "Fucking doesn't have to be personal to be effective," he tells her repeatedly, training her responses like she's nothing more than a sex robot. Their marriage has devolved into a prison where Tessa endures not just sexual objectification, but physical abuse, her body regularly marked with bruises she must carefully hide. What makes Tessa's situation particularly devastating is her isolation. When she once attempted to report Vic's abuse, a judge dismissed her as emotionally unstable, closing off any official avenue for help. This betrayal by the system designed to protect her reinforces her belief that she has nowhere to turn. The psychological impact is profound. Tessa has internalized her victimhood so deeply that she's become numb, moving through days that blur together, her identity slowly eroding under Vic's constant control. The prison of domestic abuse extends beyond physical confinement. Tessa's nursing job at Blackthorn Correctional Institution should provide some escape, but Vic's influence reaches even there, manipulating her work assignments and having officers report back on her behavior. Her home, which should be a sanctuary, has become a battlefield where she must navigate Vic's unpredictable moods and violent outbursts. The pristine tile floors that she meticulously cleans of her own blood become a symbol of the facade she maintains. Everything must appear perfect on the surface, regardless of the horror beneath. This portrayal of domestic abuse is particularly powerful because it captures not just the physical violence, but the psychological warfare that accompanies it. Tessa's gradual disconnection from herself, reciting cleaning techniques while being beaten, mentally counting minutes during unwanted intimacy, reveals the dissociation that victims often develop as a survival mechanism. Her story forces us to confront the reality that abuse victims don't simply leave because the psychological chains can be stronger than physical ones. Everything changes when Tessa meets a new inmate during a routine medical intake. Unlike the other prisoners she's treated, this man radiates danger and power that commands the room. With no name on his chart, only an inmate number, he initially communicates through nods and headshakes, his silence more intimidating than any threat could be. When he finally speaks, his voice is empty and hard as his gaze, sending chills down Tessa's spine. The pivotal moment comes when the inmate notices the bruises circling Tessa's wrists, evidence of Vic's brutal grip. In this instant, the power dynamic shifts dramatically. While Tessa has been trained to fear and obey her husband, this stranger's recognition of her abuse creates an unexpected connection. "Did someone hurt you, little mouse?" he asks, using a nickname that simultaneously infantilizes and protects her. This simple acknowledgement of her suffering, something no one else has offered, creates a dangerous crack in Tessa's carefully constructed walls. Their interaction escalates when the inmate pins her against the wall, invading her personal space without actually touching her. This physical dominance should terrify Tessa, yet it also awakens something long dormant within her. Unlike Vic's violence, which aims to control and diminish her, the inmate's aggression carries an undercurrent of protection. He sees her bruises not as evidence of her weakness, but as a wrong that should be righted. When officers finally appear, Tessa makes a fateful decision not to report his misconduct. This small act of defiance, protecting someone who recognized her pain, represents her first step toward reclaiming agency. The inmate's knowing smirk reveals he understands exactly what she's done and why. Their dangerous dance has begun, with both recognizing something in the other that no one else has seen. The mysterious inmate, eventually revealed as Grayson Kingsley, possesses an unusual talent that becomes central to their relationship. He draws Tessa in moments she doesn't realize are being observed, capturing aspects of herself she's never recognized. These sketches become tangible evidence that someone truly sees her, not as the diminished version Vic has created, but as someone with hidden strength and beauty. The first drawing appears on Tessa's desk after a particularly difficult day, an exquisite sketch of her face captured in a moment of quiet concentration. In it, I look almost beautiful, serene, a version of myself I barely recognize, Tessa notes with wonder. Signed simply with the word King, this drawing represents something Tessa has been starved of, genuine attention that appreciates rather than criticizes. As their connection deepens, more drawings appear, each capturing moments Tessa considers mundane, but Grayson transforms into something magical. He draws seemingly mundane moments I don't even realize have passed and turns them into magic, turns me into magic, Tessa reflects, revealing how these sketches gradually rebuild her shattered self-image. Through Grayson's eyes, she begins to see herself not as a victim, but as someone worthy of being seen and appreciated. The drawings serve multiple purposes in their evolving relationship. Their communication when direct conversation is impossible, evidence of Grayson's constant attention, and most importantly, their mirrors, reflecting back a version of Tessa she's forgotten exists. When he draws her with her head down but shoulders squared, he's showing her the strength she possesses but has learned to hide. These visual affirmations plant seeds of resistance that will eventually allow her to fight back against her abuser. The artistic motif continues throughout their relationship, with drawings marking significant moments and transitions. When Tessa flees to Los Angeles after Vic's death, a drawing of her at the beach appears on her door, Grayson's way of saying he's found her. This visual language they share becomes as intimate as touch, a form of connection that transcends their circumstances. The physical chemistry between Tessa and Grayson develops with dangerous intensity. Their first kiss, initiated as part of a deal Grayson proposes, becomes a watershed moment in Tessa's emotional life. Unlike Vic's mechanical violations, Grayson's touch awakens genuine desire that Tessa barely recognizes in herself. His kiss is unlike any I've experienced, delicate yet from such a brutal man, she marvels, experiencing authentic pleasure perhaps for the first time. What makes their physical connection particularly powerful is how it contrasts with Tessa's marital relationship. Where Vic uses sex as another form of control and domination, Grayson's approach, despite his dangerous nature, centers on Tessa's pleasure and response. This inversion of her normal experience creates cognitive dissonance that both terrifies and liberates her. When their first intimate encounter ends with Tessa experiencing a powerful orgasm while fully clothed, it represents not just physical release, but an emotional awakening to possibilities she'd forgotten existed. The development of their physical relationship follows a pattern of escalating intensity and intimacy. Each encounter pushes boundaries further, with Grayson gradually introducing Tessa to aspects of herself she never knew existed. His pierced body, nipples and genitals adorned with metal, symbolizes the edgy, dangerous pleasure he offers, so different from the sanitized, painful routine of her marriage. When they finally consummate their relationship fully, Tessa describes it as overwhelming, sending me into multiple orgasms, a stark contrast to her dissociated endurance of Vic's attentions. What makes this sexual awakening complex, rather than simply titillating, is Tessa's conflicted response to it. She simultaneously craves Grayson's touch while recognizing the danger it represents, not just physically, but to her sense of self. I hate myself for considering it, she admits when contemplating their first kiss, aware that surrendering to desire means acknowledging needs she suppressed for survival. This internal conflict mirrors the larger question at the heart of their relationship. Can something beautiful grow from such toxic beginnings? The plot accelerates dramatically when Grayson forces Tessa to help him escape from prison after murdering another inmate. Holding Nurse Annie hostage, he coerces Tessa into calling for a medical emergency transport, setting in motion events that will irrevocably change her life. This pivotal sequence reveals both Grayson's ruthless determination and Tessa's resourcefulness under pressure. The escape itself unfolds with tense efficiency. Tessa straps Grayson to a gurney and wheels him through the prison, her heart racing as she maintains a professional facade while internally panicking. The presence of officers and the institutional setting create constant threat of discovery, with each checkpoint representing another opportunity for their plan to collapse. When they successfully reach the ambulance and Grayson is loaded inside, Tessa returns to gather her belongings, knowing she can never return to this job or her former life. What makes the sequence particularly effective is how it forces Tessa to become an active participant rather than a passive victim. For perhaps the first time, she must make decisions and take actions that determine her fate, even if those choices are made under duress. The adrenaline of the escape awakens something in her, a capacity for decisive action that has been dormant during her years of abuse. The aftermath of the escape brings another shock when Tessa discovers Grayson waiting at her home. Their confrontation is interrupted by Vic's return, leading to a violent altercation that ends with Tessa accidentally shooting her husband. The moment when she watches Vic bleed out on their pristine tile floor represents both literal and symbolic liberation. She is finally free of his control, though at a terrible cost. This sequence of events, prison escape, confrontation, and accidental homicide, propels Tessa into a new reality where she must constantly run and reinvent herself. The woman who once endured abuse in silent resignation now becomes capable of stealing a neighbor's truck, forging documents, and creating a new identity in Los Angeles. Her transformation from victim to survivor has begun, though the psychological consequences of her actions will continue to haunt her. Tessa's journey to Los Angeles represents her attempt to claim genuine freedom for the first time. Arriving in the sunny city, she finds momentary peace in anonymity and the healing power of natural beauty. "I let the sound of crashing waves block out memories of blood and bullets," she reflects, seeking to outrun both her past and her feelings for Grayson. With remarkable efficiency, she establishes a new life, securing an apartment under a false name, finding work as a waitress, and creating security measures to protect herself. However, true freedom remains elusive. The trauma of her past manifests in hypervigilance and nightmares, while her pregnancy with Grayson's child creates both joy and complication. Most significantly, Grayson's continued presence in her life, revealed through drawings that mysteriously appear, demonstrates that she cannot simply escape her past by changing location. This section explores the psychological aftermath of trauma and violence. Despite physically removing herself from danger, Tessa carries internal wounds that cannot be so easily escaped. Her strategic placement of weapons throughout her apartment and installation of multiple locks reveals that safety has become her primary obsession. The constant looking over her shoulder and scrutiny of strangers shows how profoundly her trust has been damaged. The price of Tessa's freedom becomes devastatingly clear when she's captured by Salvatore's men, associates of the inmate Grayson killed during their escape. The brutal torture she endures, being strung up by her arms, burned with torches, and beaten, leads to the miscarriage of her unborn child. This loss represents perhaps the heaviest cost of her entanglement with Grayson, as the innocent life they created becomes collateral damage in their dangerous world. When Grayson eventually rescues her, their reunion is complicated by grief, trauma, and unresolved questions about their relationship. Tessa's recovery at Grayson's mansion represents another form of captivity. Though luxurious and ostensibly protective, she remains confined and controlled. "I accuse him of being no better than Vic, exchanging one prison for another," she observes, recognizing that freedom requires not just physical safety, but autonomy and choice. What makes Toxic particularly compelling is its refusal to provide easy moral distinctions. Grayson is simultaneously Tessa's savior and her corrupter, offering protection while drawing her into his violent world. His background, revealed gradually through conversations and flashbacks, shows a man shaped by childhood abuse who developed deadly skills as a survival mechanism. As a professional problem solver who takes contracts from shadowy organizations, he exists in a moral twilight that challenges conventional notions of good and evil. Tessa's own moral journey is equally complex. The woman who once saved lives as a nurse gradually becomes capable of violence herself. When confronted with one of her torturers strapped to a chair, she attacks him with a baseball bat in a blind rage, crossing a line she never imagined possible. "In a blind rage, I attack him with a baseball bat and rubber mallet, screaming about Vic and my lost baby," she recounts, revealing how trauma has transformed her capacity for violence. Their relationship develops in this moral gray zone, with both characters recognizing darkness in themselves and each other. "This is what my life is like. It's brutal. It's bloody. Just like me," Grayson tells Tessa after her violent outburst, offering not judgment, but recognition. Her response, "I both hate and love him," captures the fundamental contradiction at the heart of their connection. The climactic confrontation with Salvatore and his men brings these moral questions to their apex. When Danny is revealed to have caused Tessa's miscarriage, even Salvatore, a hardened crime boss, is appalled, declaring, "We don't murder children." This moment reveals that even in this world of violence, certain moral lines exist. The ensuing shootout leaves multiple men dead, with both Tessa and Grayson participating in the killing. Their shared violence becomes another bond between them, further blurring the distinction between victim and perpetrator. The story's resolution, with Judge Milton forced at gunpoint to clear Tessa of suspicion in Vic's death, represents a final compromise of conventional justice in favor of their personal moral code. When Tessa learns she's pregnant again, this new life offers potential redemption, though readers are left wondering whether a child raised in such a morally ambiguous world can truly represent a fresh start. The central question that lingers after finishing Toxic is whether Tessa and Grayson's relationship represents healing or simply a different form of harm. Unlike many romance novels that offer uncomplicated happy endings, this story leaves readers with uncomfortable ambiguity about the nature of their connection. On one hand, Grayson offers Tessa things she desperately needs: recognition of her abuse, protection from Vic, and genuine desire that awakens her sexuality. His ability to see her strength when she cannot recognize it herself provides a foundation for rebuilding her shattered identity. When he tells her, "A woman like you doesn't deserve to be treated that way," he validates her worth in ways no one else has done. Yet their relationship is built on violence, coercion, and trauma. Grayson manipulates Tessa to escape prison, involves her in murder, and later confines her to his mansion for her protection. His possessiveness, declaring he won't let her leave and would force her to stay if necessary, echoes Vic's controlling behavior, though with different motivation. "When he promises to spend every day convincing me to stay willingly, the question remains whether true consent is possible given their power imbalance." The title Toxic acknowledges this fundamental question without definitively answering it. In the epilogue, Tessa describes surrendering to Grayson's toxic love, recognizing its dangerous nature while choosing it anyway. Their relationship exists in a space where traditional definitions of healthy and unhealthy attachment don't easily apply. Both damaged by childhood trauma and adult violence, they find in each other a recognition that feels like home, even if that home is built on unstable ground. The pregnancy that concludes the story offers potential redemption, a new life that might transcend their troubled pasts. Yet readers are left wondering whether two people so shaped by violence can create something truly healthy. The happy tears they share over the ultrasound picture suggest hope, but the story's unflinching portrayal of their damaged psyches prevents any simple conclusion. Throughout Toxic, trauma emerges as a force that fundamentally reshapes identity and possibility. Both main characters carry deep wounds from childhood, Tessa abandoned by drug-addicted parents and slipping through child protective services cracks, Grayson suffering abuse from his father that left him with concussions, burns, and broken bones. These early experiences created vulnerability that later relationships exploited, establishing patterns that proved difficult to break. Tessa's response to trauma manifests in her initial passivity and dissociation. When abused by Vic, she mentally recites cleaning techniques, or counts minutes, separating her consciousness from her body to survive. This coping mechanism, while allowing her to endure, also disconnects her from her own agency and desire. Her gradual awakening through her relationship with Grayson involves reconnecting with her body and emotions, though this reconnection brings pain alongside pleasure. Grayson's trauma response took a different direction. Rather than becoming passive, he developed hypervigilance and combat skills that eventually made him a valuable problem solver for criminal organizations. His ability to compartmentalize emotion and execute violence with detachment stems directly from his childhood need to anticipate and survive his father's attacks. When he tells Tessa, "My dad used to hit my mom and me. I recognize the signs." He reveals how trauma has made him uniquely attuned to recognizing abuse in others. Their shared experience of trauma creates a profound connection between them, a recognition that goes beyond words. When Grayson notices Tessa's bruises or the way she makes herself smaller in threatening situations, he's seeing through the lens of his own experience. Similarly, when Tessa eventually understands the origins of Grayson's violence, she finds herself capable of accepting aspects of him that would terrify others. The story suggests that trauma survivors may be drawn to relationships that echo familiar dynamics, even as they try to escape them. Tessa recognizes that Grayson's controlling tendencies mirror Vic's, yet she finds herself responding differently because the underlying motivation differs. The question remains whether their mutual understanding of trauma provides foundation for healing or simply perpetuates damage in more complex forms. Despite its unflinching portrayal of violence and abuse, Toxic ultimately delivers a message about finding strength in unexpected places. Tessa's journey from passive victim to active participant in her own life represents the core transformation of the narrative. The woman who once endured Vic's abuse in silent resignation eventually becomes capable of confronting Judge Milton with a gun and demanding justice on her own terms. This transformation doesn't follow a simple trajectory of empowerment. Instead, Tessa discovers her strength through morally ambiguous actions, helping Grayson escape prison, accidentally killing her husband, attacking her torturer with a baseball bat. Each of these moments represents both damage and growth, complicating any straightforward reading of her development. When she reflects, the woman in King's drawings can't continue this way. She's acknowledging that the version of herself Grayson sees demands more than passive endurance. Grayson's influence on this transformation is complex. On one hand, he recognizes strength in Tessa before she can see it herself, creating space for her to reclaim agency. His drawings consistently portray her as more powerful than she perceives herself to be, offering visual evidence of her capacity for resistance. Yet his methods of helping her often involve manipulation, violence, and control, raising questions about whether true empowerment can emerge from such toxic dynamics. The story suggests that strength sometimes requires embracing darkness rather than transcending it. When Tessa finally confronts her torturers alongside Grayson, she doesn't rise above violence but instead participates in it, finding power in her capacity for ruthlessness. "I train my gun on Danny, silently pleading for Grayson to survive," she recounts during the final confrontation, showing how completely she's integrated into Grayson's violent world. The pregnancy that concludes the story offers a different kind of strength, the possibility of creating life and nurturing it despite their damaged pasts. This potential for generative rather than destructive power provides hope that Tessa and Grayson might channel their intensity toward protection rather than harm. Whether they can truly transform their toxic connection into healthy nurturing remains the unanswered question that lingers after the final page. At its core, Toxic explores the seductive allure of danger and its complex relationship with desire. From their first meeting in the prison infirmary, Grayson represents both threat and temptation to Tessa. His physical presence, blood-smeared jumpsuit stretched across taut muscles, tattoos snaking around his arms, communicates power that simultaneously frightens and attracts her. Unlike Vic's petty domination, Grayson's danger carries an authenticity that paradoxically makes Tessa feel safe in its honesty. The development of their physical relationship explicitly links danger with desire. Their first intimate encounter occurs against a wall in the prison infirmary, with Grayson covering Tessa's mouth to stifle her sounds while whispering about the risk of discovery. Rather than deterring her, this danger heightens her response. Instead of pushing him away, I pull him closer with my legs. I become wild and mindless. The threat of exposure becomes part of the thrill, creating intensity impossible in safer circumstances. As their relationship progresses, Grayson's body modifications, tattoos, buzzed hair, pierced nipples, and genitals symbolize the edgy eroticism he represents. These physical markers of his outsider status contrast sharply with Vic's conventional appearance and socially acceptable profession. Tessa's attraction to these symbols of rebellion represents her own emerging rejection of societal norms that kept her trapped in an abusive marriage. Beyond physical danger, Grayson offers emotional risk that both terrifies and compels Tessa. Opening herself to genuine feeling after years of protective numbness requires vulnerability she's avoided for survival. When she admits, "I both hate and love him," she's acknowledging the complex emotional terrain their relationship occupies, a space where intense feeling of any kind represents danger to someone who survived by not feeling at all. The story ultimately suggests that for some trauma survivors, conventional safety may feel empty compared to the intense aliveness that danger provides. When Tessa considers leaving Grayson for a normal life, a house, a dog, children, she immediately recognizes she can't imagine existing without Grayson anymore. The highs he gives me have no comparison. This addiction to intensity, while potentially destructive, also represents her refusal to return to the half-life of her marriage. The final image of Tessa surrendering to his toxic love acknowledges both the danger and the appeal of their connection. In choosing Grayson with full awareness of who he is, Tessa makes, perhaps, her first truly free decision, embracing danger consciously rather than having it imposed upon her. Whether this represents growth or self-destruction remains the story's final ambiguity.